Stampede Blue. What we talking about? Indianapolis, AFC South. Stampede Blue, let's air it out. Fly route, let's air it out. Topics, loaded like offense. Colt-centric, talk about it often. Stampede Blue, let's air it out. Fly route, let's air it out. Do it big, like lines for an offense. Colt-centric, don't take offense. Back in the day, Colts versus Dolphins. Nowadays, it's Jags playing Moffin South. AFC, white and blue, so pristine.
Welcome back to the Stampede Blue Colts cast, ladies and gentlemen. We are officially in the first hours of the legal tampering period, which is ridiculous to even say out loud to yourself and act like you sound smart. But here it is, guys. We're here, and there's already a little bit of action. Nothing, you know, typically, not typically necessarily, but occasionally, I guess you could say, we'll hear some things that so-and-so is looking to definitely sign with the Colts, or this team or that team. We'll start here some figures, you know, for the cat or for the salary and stuff like that. We're not hearing that kind of stuff yet, but we do got a lot to talk about. We've got some interesting some noise, I guess you could say, some noise that we probably expected to hear for the most part. Earlier today, we heard that Deion Lewis was getting some interest from the Colts. Definitely heard that from a couple different places, but most notably, we heard it from Mike Giardi, who is from NBC Boston, I guess. And so that was out there pretty early today. And, you know, I think that I expected maybe the Colts to be interested in him if McDaniels was the coach. I wasn't so much expecting them to be interested in him under Reich. That doesn't necessarily mean that they were or weren't, but he's a name that had been coming up for a little bit anyways. So that wasn't necessarily any sort of a surprise, you know, from what we saw. But there were a couple things that happened a little bit later in the day that have happened pretty recently, in fact, that is going to get our attention for sure. We've seen, you know, all of this talk about the trade back situations and stuff like that. We're talking about the Jets. We're talking about the Broncos. You know, we're talking about a couple other teams, and the Buffalo Bills thought at 21-22 had come around. You know, we had heard some talk about that, and we weren't really sure what to make of it, I guess you could say, because they had the 21st and 22nd pick overall. It's nice. You get two first-rounders, back-to-back picks, get the second guy's guaranteed to be whoever you want after the first one for sure. And, you know, it just kind of people weren't real high on it. That's a long way to trade back from three. Well, the Bills did make a deal today. They sent Cordy Glenn to the Bengals to swap first-round picks. I'm not sure what else is coming up, but Peter Schrager reported that the Bills will go to number 12 overall. The Bengals will get their 21st overall pick. So the Bills now are at 12 and 22 in the first round. That's a lot more enticing than 21 and 22, right? So, I mean, look, everybody is trying to correct me when I put this out on Twitter that I thought it was very interesting. Benjamin Albright's also saying keep an eye on those two teams, the Bills and the Colts, as potential trade partners. And this makes sense. The Colts are at number three overall. We know the whole situation. The Colts are in prime position to trade back or get whoever they want at three if they stand pat. But with these two picks here, that is a big base of what the Colts are going to want for that number three pick. They're going to want more. You know, some are suggesting that maybe another number one next year, maybe one of their twos, one of their threes this year. We don't really know how that's going to play out, or if it's going to play out at all. The Bills could very well go up to New York at number two. But this does make it awful interesting for the Colts going forward. I think that's something that is most certain about that. I mean, look, we know that the Colts want what some of these guys are going to bring. I mean, there's a lot of talent between the number 12 and the number 22 spots. The Colts could possibly, maybe, if he's still back there, Quentin Nelson, doubt it. You know what I mean? A lot of people are talking around him about 7, 8 through 12 or 10 or whatever. And maybe he's still there, maybe not. More than likely not. But the Colts may not get Bradley Chubb, but they have their pick, basically, of a couple of really good options there at the edge. So I think that's something that the Colts have to be interested in, at least talking. And quite honestly, Ballard has to use this leverage that he has and to be able to, you know, kind of milk this with other teams. If the Jets don't get a top level guy, if the Broncos don't get a top level guy, then the Chris Ballard and the Colts are going to have to use this, you know, to kind of drive up the price. So I think this is a really good starting point. And it definitely, I think, not I won't say definitely, but I definitely, I do think that this is kind of something that's been in the works. And for, you know, for credit to Benjamin Albright, he's been kind of saying this for a while, that he thinks that the Colts are, that the Bills are trying to get into the top five, you know, even the top 10 and stuff like that. So I think that makes sense for what they're trying to do. And like I said, the Colts are perfect trading partners for just about everybody. But another thing came up today. You know, one of the guys we talked about on yesterday's show, and one of the guys that everybody's been talking about that the Colts should land in free agency if they can at all possible, is Andrew Norwell, the guard out of Carolina. The Colts have so many desperate needs along this offensive line, around this offense, really, that you wouldn't expect them to, with how much success they'd kind of had. And like guys like Doyle, like shining almost. But with, you know, the backfield needing revamped, between the offensive line being pretty god awful forever. I mean, that Andrew Norwell is a guy who makes not only a lot of sense, but he makes a lot of sense to be able to go out and throw that money at him, because the Colts need a guy who didn't give up a sack or a QB hit last year. That's insane. So, I mean, look, you get that. You can basic, if Andrew Norwell's in the building, man, you could double up that second round, that second first round pick, maybe even the first pick of the second round. You could really do some damage grabbing yourself another offensive lineman, give yourself a chance at an edge rusher. Colts have a lot of opportunities here if they can get two picks in the first round and maybe get a second out of that Buffalo as well. And you know, I don't know what else they can get. I'm terrible at doing that, but I think that that's, you know, definitely going to put the Colts in a premier position if they land Andrew Norwell. I think a lot of everything else that the Colts would get would be gravy, to be quite honest with you. They're going to need some more guys in free agency. We don't know what Ballard's going to spend on it, but we definitely know that the Colts need it, and he knows the Colts need it. The Colts desperately need help on the back end. The Colts are going to look for it. I mean, they're going to spend some money, guys. They've got a ton to spend. And, you know, like I told you guys yesterday, the Colts absolutely are going to have to do something. They're going to have to spend some money. They're going to have to overpay somebody. And this just kind of comes with the territory. Another guy that's Colts are apparently among several teams interested in, New York Jets tight end Austin Seferin Jenkins. This is interesting. Now, the other day I did a mock and drafted Mike Gesicki out of Penn State. I just thought it was interesting because, like I said about, again, last night about Eric Swope, we don't know what Ballard thinks of him. We don't know what the situation is around that. And you get a guy like Gesicki in there, I mean, that might be a nice target. Maybe Seferin Jenkins, he's a hell of a talented guy. You get him in the building, that adds to the tight end core quite a bit. You know, you kind of probably put Doyle more in a role that he's comfortable with. He'd be a heck of a second or third tight end as far as receiver-wise. Think about that. If the Colts were able to have a couple guys really stand out, whether it be Swope or Travis, Ross Travis, or whoever, you get Seferin Jenkins as another receiver there, and then you use Doyle a little bit more of an inline blocker, H-back type thing. That's something that he's going to be used in a lot under Frank Reich. That offensive system uses a lot of H-back wham concepts, apparently. So that's going to be something that he's going to be a big part in. I mean, unless you want to see a fullback on the Colts roster, which I do not. So that's something that I think is going to be something that is definitely going to be in the make. So this is very, you know, starting to become interesting. We've talked about the Colts have apparent interest in former Cowboys edge Benson Moyoa. He's basically making his rounds of three or four different teams. And that's, you know, hey, if he's depth, I don't know a bunch about that dude, but I am going to, you know, research him a little bit more. To me, it seems like a depth guy, but a guy who's he's pretty needed, pretty wanted if he's seeing three or four different teams. So another guy that we were heavy on last year, talked a bunch about as far as who the Colts were going to be interested in. They ended up getting Hankins out of them. But there was two guys on the market that could be that nose tackle last year for the Colts. Hankins was one of them. Dontari Poe was the other. Dontari Poe, apparently the Colts have interest in him. He's, I think, seeing at least three or four teams himself. And I think there's three or four or five teams that are showing interest, apparently. So, Poe, this, we go back to Al Woods. Where does he fit in this? Where does he fit in this new scheme? Does he fit in the new scheme? We don't know. But the Colts, with this four-man front, these even fronts, they're going to want to get pressure from the defensive tackles. They're going to want to get pressure from those guys. Al Woods did a pretty good job of that last year, but that's not really his, that's not his calling card, right? He even took over the zero tech last year because they felt that Hankins was more of a well-rounded three tech than he was, or maybe so much that that didn't take away, that would have boosted their line by keeping Woods in there as a zero and then using Hankins as a guy who could kind of roam a little bit and create some pressure from the interior. So, but now, man, think about Dontari Poe. He'd be expensive. I don't know that the Colts are willing to throw all that kind of money at him, but that is, I mean, I think that that's interesting, if nothing else. I think that the Colts need to probably get a guy like that in the building. That would be, man, he's not the youngest guy. He did pretty well last year in Atlanta, and I think that you'd be crazy if someone told you that, you know, the Colts are going to have Dontari Poe and Jonathan Hankins in the interior of their defensive line. You'd have a lot of Colts fans pretty excited. I'd be excited. That'd be fun. That'd be a lot of fun. Colts would be instantly a dangerous team again, and not to mention against the run, where this new system, this new scheme, is surely to leave some gaping holes against the run. A 4-3 is typically, especially the way the Colts ran it, and if they're really going to do some of this Tampa 2 stuff, it's going to leave the run in the middle of the field pretty vulnerable. Not only do they need a linebacker, they need a really good one. So it'll be interesting to see if we start hearing some stuff about Hitchens or anything like that over the coming days, hours, you know, however that's going to play out. But you've got to believe, and I know, and you know, as little as we hear about everything that's going on within the Colts, Colts have been pretty quiet under Chris Ballard. Not a lot of stuff leaking out. So this will be continued interest in what's going on. I mean, I think that we'll hear some stuff, but I think a lot of it will be, you know, once something's mostly done. I don't think that Ballard wants players, agents, all throwing out all these negotiations that's going on behind the scenes. I think that's kind of the way he does his deal. Look, if I hear anything about it until we, you know, possibly agree, whether that's tonight or whether that takes until Wednesday, I don't want to hear anything about it. You know, I mean, unless you're talking about other teams with competition, but agents are the ones that typically drop this stuff because they want to be proud of their player's contract that they've thrown together for them. So a little bit of interesting stuff there, a little bit of news just in the first several hours of the tampering period. We got my man Trevor Sekema coming up on the other side of the break, and we're going to talk to him about this draft class, talk about some guys that he's really interested in, some maybe some under-radar guys. And hopefully I'm going to get some out of him about this edge class because I'm interested to him, talk to him about it. So thank you guys. Hang tight for the break, and we'll be right back. All right, guys, we got a great guest on the line tonight with us, Trevor Sekema, one half of the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast and at Pewter Report. What's going on, Trevor? Thank you for joining me, man.
Yeah, man, it's good to be back with you again.
Absolutely. Good to hear from you. Good to see that you guys have been keeping busy. I mean, you and John have been kind of heating it up for quite a while. Everything's about to come to fruition now. You guys are going to see what all happens. You guys have done a great job covering the draft.
Doing a five days a week podcast about the NFL draft. We have certainly talked our fill about all kinds of prospects, rankings, team needs, all that kinds of stuff. We've been doing that all year, and so it's good to finally kind of be getting down to the home stretch here and getting to see what actually comes to fruition.
Absolutely. That's a long track, too. There's no off season with you guys either. So I want to talk a little bit in just in general about some of the guys in this draft, but I really kind of want to focus on some of these edge rushers. I mean, a lot of what, you know, Colts Twitter and Colts fans are hearing is Bradley Chubb's that guy at number three, if he's there and if they stay put, you know, and that he's the king basically of this edge rushing group. And I'll be curious to get some of your thoughts on this group, but more importantly, I just want to see what you think about this draft class in general.
So, for example, the edge rush class in general, or just everything in general?
Yeah, everything. Kind of what you see with, you know, each position.
I think quarterback, certainly at the top, you've got some more promising things than we've seen in previous drafts. I mean, even, you know, last year or a couple years ago, really, you know, you had Jared Goff and Carson Wentz, and they've ended up being great. But even at the time, it's not like they were these super alluring prospects. I think you've got four. Really, I guess from an NFL's perspective, you think you've got five really alluring quarterback prospects with Rosen, Mayfield, Darnold, Lamar Jackson, and Josh Allen. Even though, you know, some people are higher and lower on Jackson and Allen than others might be. I mean, for the NFL's sake, these guys are pretty coveted, I think, all around. And so that always makes for an interesting draft. The running back class, again, just freaks. I think that's going to be a trend that we're seeing here, is just that these running backs that are coming out are just going to be these freak athletes that you can almost get one in really anywhere in the top 100, and they could potentially be your starting running back. Wide receivers a little bit down, even though there's kind of some guys to like here. Same thing with tight end. Offensive tackle's not great. Interior line, though, guards and centers, I think it's a really good class for that. So, if you're in the mix for that kind of a thing, if your team is.
Oh, we are.
It's kind of a good year to have that. There's a lot of really good interior offensive linemen, as we're seeing, you know, around the NFL, man. Geno Atkins, Aaron Donald, Fletcher Cox, you know, even Joey Bosa when he kicks it. So, winning on the interior is becoming a defensive priority. And if you can disrupt the pocket from the middle, that helps your defense so much. And we're seeing, we're going to have to start seeing offensive lines make sure they're emphasizing their interior line play. It's not just, I mean, sure, you need great offensive tackles because edge rushing is still a big part of the NFL. Obviously, it's one of the most highest paid positions for a reason. But, man, you can't skip out on shoring up your interior anymore. We're getting some, again, you know, freak athletes playing these big boy positions on the interior on the defensive line. And so, again, you know, moving over to the defensive line, interior defensive line this year, I think it's very stout. There's a lot of guys at the top that could really impact the team. You know, Taven Bryan, Maurice Hurst, hopefully when his heart checks out, Nathan Shepard, Vita Vea, Derek Nnadi, all these guys. I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody, but the edge rush class, see, that's the thing, and that's an interesting point about Chubb that we can get to in a little bit. It's not very deep. It's strong at the very top, but it's not very deep, so it almost, you know, increases that value of Bradley Chubb and maybe a couple of the other guys a little bit more. Same with outside linebacker. The interior linebacker is actually pretty decently deep. Cornerback, it's kind of pick your flavor. Safety, not really a great year for that outside of Derwin James, and maybe if you think Minka Fitzpatrick's there, but... that's kind of just an overview of the draft. Those are some positions that I think are higher this year. And, you know, ideally you'd love to set yourself up to where when you're a team, you can allow yourself to let a draft class come to you, if you will. You know, right. You want to make sure you're always drafting the important positions of football. You know, I have a draft philosophy where if I was a general manager, I would be drafting a quarterback, an offensive tackle, and an edge rusher every single year. Mm. Every single year. Wouldn't matter what had around me. I would be drafting. Those would be three of my draft picks right there, no matter what. And at least one of them would be in the top 100. And that would be my draft philosophy. But outside of that, I think you always want to let the class come to you if you can. So you want to set yourself up in free agency. You want to set yourself up with your contracts to be able to capitalize on draft classes as much as you can. You know, it's not always something that you could do, but ideally as a team, you'd love to capitalize on that kind of stuff. You know, don't let it be, you know, we got lucky that we just needed a wide receiver and we happened to pick one. You know, it's true. There's always going to be an element of luck involved with development of college players and everything like that. But certainly when you're talking about franchises, you want to take it into your hands as much as you can. So that's kind of my draft strategy. That was a little bit of an overview of the class overall. And it's a pretty cool class. I like it. I'm very interested to see how it plays out.
Me too. It is a fun class. Is there a narrative you think that maybe has gained so much ground over the past several weeks and even months, I would say, that you just don't buy into?
Like for a player specifically or...
Just about, I mean, about the class, about it. Yeah, it can be about a player. I mean, just anybody in general, or any narrative in general that just seems to continue just to get repeated, and it's almost just like groupthink that you're just like, look, I don't see it that way at all.
Yeah, in the NFL, I mean, from the NFL circle, certainly Josh Allen stuff's really weird. They're pushing him. They're pushing him really hard.
They are.
And don't get me wrong, man. Like Josh Allen, not only does he have, he's got the size. He's athletic for his size. He's got the huge arm. But he's a good kid too. He's a really good kid. We got to meet him in Mobile, Alabama, when he was there for the Senior Bowl. So it's easy to root for this kid, but you've got to be able to look at him and realize that he has a lot of development to go. And you know, the recent news this week is the Buffalo Bills they traded up to 12 with the Bengals.
Yes.
And now it's like, okay, well, now they're poised to move up to number 3, mm-hmm. perhaps with the Colts, perhaps at 4 with the Browns, whatever it is. And I think they're moving up for Josh Allen. It's like, okay, man, if you're picking crazy. Josh Allen that high,
that's weird.
Like, he's going to lose you a lot of games mm-hmm. in the first 2 years. Like, and so that's a weird narrative. You know, the Baker Mayfield, the whole is he too cocky thing is just absolutely ridiculous. The whole Josh Rosen, could he fit with a certain team narrative, that one's really weird. The Saquon Barkley being the greatest prospect of all time, I'm not sure I'm so sold on that. That's about it. I think off the top of my head, I mean, Quentin Nelson, I could talk about like Quentin Nelson, people talking about Quentin Nelson as the best prospect in this draft, but I actually agree with that. So that's not really a narrative that I disagree with.
Yeah, that one's hard not to. And it's funny the way these guys get compared, because if it's any other position besides quarterback, it's basically, do you have any real like issues off
right,
the field?
Yeah. Notice how a lot of those I said are quarterbacks, right?
Yeah, yeah. And when it's quarterbacks, it seems it's very nitpicky, which I get it. The position, you know, that's
sure.
That is the franchise, and I understand that. But it's so funny how petty the quarterback talk is when it's like, look, no, this guy, you know, has gun charges and stuff. Nobody cares about that with the quarterbacks. It's all about, you know, does he have a pinky ring? You know, I mean, that everybody cares about the dumbest things with the quarterback. And it's everything has to be a major, major issue within just about any other position, it seems, whether it be health or off the field type stuff. And it's just really kind of funny how they kind of do that. And like I said, it's kind of warranted because it is the position that it is. But it's just it's really funny when you sit back and listen to the critiques about that position and then the rest of the field, they're nothing alike almost ever.
Right, right. No, that's a good point.
It's kind of funny. Let's look at this edge class. I'm really interested in it. We are doing our version at Stampede Blue we're doing a bunch of scouting reports, and we're going to have a bunch of this available to the public here pretty soon. And I'm kind of stuck with these edge rushers. I love it though, because this is a very interesting class in my opinion to be looking at. Let's get right to that, kind of what we led into at the beginning of our talk about Bradley Chubb. He's the king right there, right, though? I mean, he's the top dog in this class. I see him that from what I've seen so far of all these players, and I'm just curious if that's your take on it as well.
Yeah, especially the Colts are moving to a 4-3, right?
Mm-hmm.
If we're talking about a 4-3 defensive end, you're talking more about an all-around game than more of a specialization. You know, if you run a 3-4, yes, you're going to need one of your defensive ends to be able to pass rush as well. But, you know, chances are your main pass rush is going to be a stand-up guy, and he's going to be a lot of specialization. Like, he might just be able to win off of speed, and that might be okay. Like, that might be the edge rusher you need and that you cover the most. In a 4-3, it doesn't really work like that. You do have different sides of the ball with the strong in the open side or strong in the closed side. Actually, I think I just messed that up. Open and closed side.
Right.
To where, like, the defensive ends have different roles, mm-hmm. but both of them basically have to also be able to give you something in run support. Like,
right.
I think that's the biggest thing with Bradley Chubb, is that knowing that when you pick him, you're picking him high and you're picking a three-down player.
Right.
Because specialization edge rushers have a place in the NFL. I mean, like, Von Miller was like that for a long time. Still kind of is a little bit. He's not the greatest run supporter, but like, Von Miller was basically just a pass rusher for a long time. It didn't matter. He was one of the most valuable players in the NFL because he was that good at what he did.
Mm-hmm.
That's not exactly something that you can do in a 4-3. And I think that's why Bradley Chubb is as highly regarded as he is, because this is not only a guy who can get to the passer on passing downs, but he can also anchor in the run.
Right.
So even if your defense maybe gets, let's say they get fooled on a play, you know, it's a play action and it ends up being a pass on a down that you thought it was going to be a run down. Bradley Chubb can flip the switch and turn into a pass rusher from a run stuffer really quick, whereas other guys don't necessarily have that switch, whether it's because their bodies aren't big enough, they don't have enough natural strength, they can't anchor as well. There's all kinds of reasons why that's a thing. But Chubb is a three-down lineman, and that's why I think that he takes that crown as the top edge player to have, especially for a 4-3.
Yeah, he's been really impressive to me, and a couple things that I've noticed from him just in general is a lot of people will say, and I think what the point they're getting at is that he's not an electric burst guy.
He's not a speed guy.
Yeah.
No.
And I see
his
that.
His bad three cone proved that.
Right.
You know, like, and that's something that's going to worry people. It's like, oh man, see, look at his three cone. I told you he couldn't bend the edge. Yeah, but.
Oh, he does though.
I mean, like, look, just watch the tape. Right. I mean, don't give me, I love the combine. Like, mm-hmm. I love the number testing and everything like that. And I know it's a box check thing. And when something's surprising, you got to go back to the tape to it. But if you look at Bradley Chubb's bad three cone time and you think, oh man, the flexibility, the bend might not be there with him. You go, ah, man, I might have to go back to the tape. And then you turn back on the tape and you go, damn, this guy's good.
Yeah, yes.
And so that's why it's a thing where it's like you can't overblow the combine in certain situations. I think Bradley Chubb's a guy that you can't overblow the combine with.
Yeah. I think that what they're mistaking with that, they're like, oh, he doesn't have the burst and Landry's this and that. And I'm like, look, my take on him as far as – I'll be honest. I've got a man crush on this dude because I think he's the real deal. I truly do. And all the way through. And I'm okay with that. But the thing that I've noticed the most about him is he has good burst. He has, I think, really good burst. Elite, no, maybe not. But good burst. And not only that, but once he gets to the engagement point with the tackle, he's already a step ahead of them with his technique and hand usage. And that's what I guess that I covet with a guy. He's got an executable plan like every snap, and that is impressive. That it's not something that I've seen with very many of these guys in this edge class, and I think that's something else along with his natural physical abilities that is going to give him the clear edge to be an immediate impact guy. He takes what the offensive linemen give him. He can dismiss double teams even with just like several moves in succession. And I love that about him. And that's another thing. You just don't see that with very many guys in this draft class. I don't think that there's any question as to whether he's the guy. But people are trying to nitpick him as well. I'm like, look, I think you're trying to do it just a little bit too much. Is he Von Miller? Maybe not, but this guy is the total package. And I think that people that are talking about his ceiling maybe not being quite as high as Landry, I can understand where they get that. And I understand that that's a lot of people think that, I think. But I also think that Chubb is a guy that is going to come in there in his rookie year, want to play his ass off, and then never get worse than he, or, you know, always get better every single year.
Sure.
And I just don't see how this guy's ceiling can't just be whatever he wants it to be with work ethic. And I mean, we're not talking about, you know, a guy who isn't naturally gifted here either. So this guy's got plenty to work with.
I think that I think that Harold Landry's ceiling is higher than Bradley Chubb's, but like Bradley Chubb's floor is so high for the reasons that you said. Like, you are getting a good football player no matter what, and you might be getting a really great football player.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, anytime you have that, like I said, you're talking about a really solid prospect and a guy who is, I think pretty safe in this draft class.
Yeah, and Harold Landry's got some really exciting or sexy play about him. My only thing is, and I don't dismiss the part about, you know, his ceiling possibly being higher than Chubb's. My point is that you may wait 3 years before you see anything about that. You know, I mean, to where he can be a multiple guy as far as being able to do more than just rush the passer.
For example, like the Bucs saw that with Noah Spence for a while. Like Noah Spence was a really good speed edge guy, and normally speed edge guys, like, it takes them a year or two because they have to adjust to the NFL game. Normally the moves that they do in college don't work in the NFL. Like the game is faster. The offensive tackles are fast. They're bigger and faster. Mm-hmm. And so are the guards. And so it's like, it normally takes them a year or two to acclimate their own skills to get to where they need to be that speed rusher. So no, I think I agree with you there with Harold Landry, even though I think his ceiling is pretty dang high.
Yeah, I think it is. If that's the thing, if you got a good strong side guy, I mean, and all you want him to do is rush the passer his rookie year, then so be it. That's great because you're going to get that. But I think that if you're looking for a guy who can do it all and a guy who doesn't eventually at some point risk being pigeonholed into a single role and not being a three down guy for you, then that's the scary part about Landry for me. Although he's off the charts as far as what he can become. There's no doubt about
it. Right.
Marcus Davenport's another interesting one, and I think that when you watch his tape is pretty damn impressive. The thing that I think at first, let me put it this way. Before I watched all of his stuff, I'd watched several games. Hadn't watched all of them that I could get my hands on. But I was kind of like, I don't know. When people started making a big deal about his first few practices at the Senior Bowl, I thought, man, this guy's learning all new stuff. Let's give him a break. You know, then he came on and played better in the end of the week and then had a really good game. But then I started seeing some stuff that really kind of stuck out to me in his tape. I guess the best way for me to describe it is that I think like his footwork and stuff is unintentional. Like he just, if it works, it's great. If it doesn't, then he doesn't have a clue what he's going to do next. He's one that I didn't see that had a plan, so to speak.
Right.
Had all the physical stuff. The one thing I really loved about him, and I think that's going to make him increasingly impressive in his rookie year, no matter where he plays or how much he plays, he is one of the guys that I've seen in this class who's constantly, if he's not in the quarterback's face or getting at the quarterback, his hands, if he gets stopped at the line of scrimmage, his hands are up all the time. He mm-hmm. is very good at that. And I think he's going to have a ton of batted balls, and I think he's going to lead to some interceptions even in his rookie year, and that's going to be one of his strengths aside from just being able to rush the passer.
I am very cautious mm-hmm. about Marcus Davenport because even Davenport himself said at the Senior Bowl this year, somebody asked him, do you ever dream of this moment? You know, you sitting up at the podium at the Senior Bowl, and he basically was like, no. Like a year ago, I didn't even think of that I was good enough to play in the NFL. And my coach was just like, hey, you could be good enough to play in the NFL. And I went, oh, okay. And like he literally basically kind of said that. And you can tell. Mm-hmm. Marcus Davenport does a lot of really nice things on his tape. I think his hands are super violent when he's getting into the offensive tackles, especially when he gets speed rush. I think he's got a good burst on the outside when he's on the edge. But everything else is so raw. And like you said, the Senior Bowl, very exposing for him. Mm-hmm. And it's probably a lot of its technique, like you said. There's some raw ability there with Marcus Davenport, but you know, anytime you have a guy who is that big and that long, it only matters if you're also a technician with your technique.
Yeah.
Because
good point.
You've got to still be, I think he's 6'5" and a half, Marcus Davenport is. And it's like, whoa, that's a big edge rushing dude. Yeah, it is. And if you can't get leverage, if you can't make sure that you're getting leverage, especially when his frame is that lean,
yeah.
you're not going to do a damn thing.
Right. And he plays tall too.
He's got to make sure he knows how to get leverage. He's got to use that long arm extension to get around the edge. He's got to be better with disengaging blocks, you know, all that kinds of stuff. And certainly, this is the thing about Marcus Davenport. When like right around Senior Bowl time, people were talking about him, NFL Network people, I mean, NFL Network people specifically that week were talking about Marcus Davenport being a sleeper for the top 10, the top 5, and it's like, guys, he's strictly a third down pass rushing player right now. You're not picking that person in the top 5
mm-hmm.
or the top 10,
right?
Or top 15. Like, I would not pick Marcus Davenport in the first round. That's just me.
Yeah, and I agree with you.
I think he has a lot to still shore up about his game, because right now you can't play Marcus Davenport on first down.
Mm-hmm.
He would get blown off the ball. I mean, Alex Kappa was blowing him off the ball every play. Like you said, those first couple days in the Senior Bowl. Now, granted, he had a pretty nice third day of the Senior Bowl practice,
mm-hmm.
and that could attest to what you were saying. You know, he's learning technique better. He's getting more comfortable. He's doing some different things. Okay. But again, I'm not drafting you in the top 32 picks if I've got to sit here and basically teach you how to play defensive end, because at that point it's just a redshirt year for you anyways. And then we're talking about talent development. We're talking about timetables. We're talking about usage and experience and all the things after that. And all of a sudden, if you do that, here you are halfway through your rookie contract and you're just now kind of coming to fruition. And mm-hmm. That's a big if with Marcus Davenport. And so, yeah, I see it. I've written a cover 3 on him. I've done a film review. I see the things that people are talking about.
Oh, sure.
I think it's few. I think right now it would be few and far between against NFL competition.
Yeah, I agree with you. And like I said, if you don't, you watch a couple of his games and you're like, man, because some of that stuff just jumps off so much, it almost just, it makes you almost biased to what you see the rest of the time. Like, oh my God, but yeah, that last play was really good. But it's
right,
like, man,
sure,
really pay attention to what he's doing each time. Like I said, I didn't know another way. I'm not a big, I guess having terms, you know, as far as my scouting and all that, but that was unintentional, was the only way that I could describe what he does, because it just seems like he was happy if it worked, and if it didn't, he was done. His play was over at that point if he couldn't get past what he was doing. He had nothing to offer, a secondary or a counter move or anything like that. And that was, then like you said, his hands were violent, but he wasn't technical with them at all. You know, so he's got a long way to go. There's a couple other guys on this list that I didn't expect to be all that excited about as far as what I saw on them. But I see some guys, and I know that Sam Hubbard's one who's getting a little bit of pub. Mm-hmm. I think he's in several people's top five, six, maybe. I really, really like Sam Hubbard. Jeff Holland is another guy. I'm not saying top five of the class or anything like that, but I don't know what it is about his play, but I really like him. I think he's going to be a good pro.
Yeah, I think I have my rankings divided up a little bit differently this year. I kind of tried to go into more detail where it's not just like, oh, this is my DN group or this is my outside linebacker group. I think the NFL is so different in the way that especially they specialize things. I've kind of broken it up between 3-4 defensive end and 4-3 defensive end and, you know, 3-4 outside linebacker. I kind of have it broken up that way. And for 4-3, since we're talking about the Colts, my top five right now would be Bradley Chubb, Harold Landry, Josh Sweat, Duke Ejifer, and Sam Hubbard. Mm-hmm. Those would be that would be my top five for the 4-3 edge guys.
Yeah, and Hubbard's a fun guy to watch. I really enjoyed the first couple games I watched. I was not real impressed because it seemed like more or less Terrell Basham, great example this year. There was very little counter to what he did. He was trying to bull rush everything. There was, you know, no technique in there. It seemed like he lost anything that he gained in the offseason. And Sam Hubbard was kind of that way. It just seemed like he didn't really know how to get around the guys. But then you watch some of his games later on in the year, especially that Penn State game. That is some of the best tape I've seen so far from anybody. I mean, it was amazing. He was just killing everybody. Spin moves, for initial and secondary with his hands. It was crazy to watch. He plays with a ton of energy. And I just really, really liked what Sam Hubbard brought. Where would you peg him, I guess, if you were to throw out a random spot in the draft? Where would you peg him as far as a possibility?
I mean, since pass rusher is always pretty solidified, I mean, end of the first round, early second round is probably where Sam Hubbard's gonna go. I'd probably be more inclined to say end of the first round, though, just because, again, you know, it's a position where teams are always going to try to get the next best guy. So Sam Hubbard's really interesting because, you know, he's a person who, he used to play safety. Like, that I think when he came into Ohio State, he was a safety.
Wow.
Or at least he was at the end of his high school career, and then they just threw a bunch of weight on him and let him be an athlete on the trenches. And we've seen that work really well for Ohio State when they played college ball. So, no, Sam Hubbard's nice. I like Ejifer, too. I don't know how much of him that you have watched, but in terms of 4-3 defensive ends, I think he's really solid. And he played with, I can't remember exactly what he said his shoulder injury was, but it might have been like a partially torn shoulder labrum. Like, all of 2017, he played with it, and he was wearing a sling at the combine, and we're like, what happened to your shoulder? And he's like, oh, I finally had surgery. And somebody asked him, like, how long have you been hurt? And he's like, oh, I was hurt the entire 2017 season, but I wasn't not going to play my last year. So,
wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, kid obviously tough as nails. And I thought he showed good stuff as a 4-3 defensive end. So, he's a guy too. I don't think Duke Ejifer goes first round. I think probably Chubb goes first round. Harold Landry goes first round. Josh Sweat will go first round. And then I think Hubbard is the kind of the fourth defensive end that would go first round. I think Ejifer is probably the first guy in the second round.
Interesting. Now, what do you like the most about Sweat? What do you see with him? Because I see I see a lot of potential with him as far as to be able to rush the passer, but I think initially I kind of have him as more of an edge setter guy for the time being. I saw a lot of possibilities with him, but I don't think that he comes in and is any sort of a difference maker necessarily in his rookie year.
Yeah, let me tell you something about Josh Sweat. Charles Kelly, the Florida State's defense coordinator, is terrible. Basically all around that Florida State defense was underachieving with some of those athletic freaks in the country, as we've seen with, you know, with Derwin James and, right, and with Josh Sweat. And you saw at the combine the kind of athletic potential that Sweat has for a guy his size. And he is 250, so sort of worrisome on the line because it's not really in a high percentile of defensive end, especially 4-3 defensive ends. But I'll just say as a cautionary tale, when you watch his tape, a lot of times they had him in like what would have been like a flat-footed three-point stance or like a four-point stance that's flat-footed. And a lot of that is for just run stuffing,
right,
and not really attacking the edge with speed. And the Miami game, John Ledyard, my co-host, actually had to turn me on to this because I was pretty skeptical of Sweat too. And he's much more of an edge and a front seven savant than I am. And he told me, watch the Miami game with Josh Sweat. You'll see them, especially at the end of the game, he'll go in a sprinter's three-point stance where one foot is in front of the other, and you're actually getting a head start. And he's like, you will see a couple of snaps that you see all those combine numbers that wowed you. You will see them on the field in those couple of plays. And so, I don't think this guy's like freakishly. It does have like the freaky bend, but in terms of like get off the ball, get off the snap, becoming a speed rusher, I did see some of it in that Miami game. So. I'll just say that about Josh Sweat. I think that his tape is littered with misuse. And I think ultimately he's probably going to end up being a late first round pick.
And that's, I think some people get turned off of some of the guys that are like that pretty quickly because, you know, their tape, if you're just watching it, expecting to see, you know, a generational edge rusher in every single guy, that's just not how they're used, you know, typically.
Right.
And it can turn some people off of wanting to watch them. But I saw the strength, speed, the hands and everything with Sweat. And probably right along the lines of what you just said, I just didn't see him use them enough.
Yep. Yep.
And that was one of the things. Like who's one of the guys on here that you're not hearing much about out there that people should start paying attention to?
From the, like, from a 4-3 edge?
Sure.
Oh, let me look here. Let me pull up my rankings again. Okay, so I actually like Tyquan Lewis from Ohio State.
Me too.
Probably more than other people do. And then as more of just a really solid prospect, I like Kentavious Street from NC State. He was a guy who played opposite of Bradley Chubb. I got to see him at the East-West Shrine practices. I thought he was clearly one of the better trench players there. Also a great dude. Got to interview him a little bit. But he's a guy who, again, he has the size, the strength, and even some sneaky athleticism to be a reliable edge player. I don't know how much of an impact he's going to have right away. But, again, those are probably two guys that – Lewis is more of a guy who I could see having an impact pretty early on in his career. But those are two guys that I guess I would think are – my guys, you know, in the bottom of the 4-3 edge class.
Yeah, I like Tyquan quite a bit, actually, a lot more than I expected to. Tell me, okay, a lot of people have Arden Key as like a second or third in this group, and I don't see that in any. I mean, I know that his 16 tape was better than last year's, but with the things that are, you know, that have been off the field issues with him, or just issues in general with Arden Key, I could care. I watched his 16 tape, but I don't even care what it looks like because I want to know what he's done lately. And he didn't do enough for me to really even get into a top five area at all.
I would not draft Arden Key at all.
No, I wouldn't either.
And I would not draft him at all.
More because of the off the field stuff or what you saw on tape?
I think both has something to do with the other. I think there were a lot of flashes from his freshman season that I took notice of personally. I remember watching one LSU game when he was a true freshman, and I remember tweeting out, holy hell, who is 49 for LSU? And people were telling me, that's Arden Key. He's going to be a monster. So obviously sophomore year, kind of goes off his sophomore year, but then the end of sophomore year, in between that and the junior year, he ends up leaving LSU program, comes back, gains weight, loses weight, gains weight, lies about it, comes to the combine. He's 238. That's in like the second percentile of edge rushers. he tells us at the he tells us that, oh, I was up to 270 at one point. No, you weren't. This is a guy who's like I bet he's played at the weights of 230 pounds and 250 pounds. Oof. And whatever he says, like if he says that he was up to 260, 262, he never played at 262. No way. And then you look at some of those, you know, like the fluctuations in weight and the leaving the team. And then you go on the field and it's like his junior year. I mean, if you want to say he was protecting himself, like, okay, but how am I supposed to believe that? Mm-hmm. I don't like. What am I supposed to believe? This is a guy who left the program. And if it was a family reason or something or blah, 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 like, okay, I guess I get it. But, I mean, he disappeared for more than half the season on tape this year.
Right.
I went and saw the Florida LSU game in person. And I kind of jokingly tweeted before then. I said, I'm about to watch Arden Key against a bad offensive line. And I'm going to tell you that he's either a top five pick or a complete bust with nothing in between. That was kind of a joke.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly,
yeah.
Arden Key did not make one play that game. Not one.
No. And I saw way too much of that to me. And it just was like, I'm waiting for this guy to show me something. And I watched
I just don't know how I would trust him.
Yeah, no, not. And that's the thing. I mean, I don't remember who had him at number two. I saw somebody with a ticker, whether it's NFL Network or one of the networks or whatever, somebody had him at number two. And I'm just going, oh my God, I can't understand how that's even possible. I just don't see that at all. Not only are you relying on his 2016 tape, you're dismissing everything you saw in 2017 to have him in your top five, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, he would have to. I mean, again, and maybe he does. Like, maybe he does turn it on in the NFL, and we see that sophomore year Arden Key for a long time. And if he does, like, great. I mean, like, I hope he does. I don't root against any of these prospects, whether I like him or not. You know, I want them to obviously achieve their own potential. But at this point, I would be heavily betting against what my better judgment is, that he's going to be good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's just from stuff that I feel like he has showed us over the last year. So,
right.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I can't get on board Darden Key.
Where do you sit on Lorenzo Carter? He's a guy that I felt like I needed to go back and watch more tape on, because I just was not impressed with his tape. But then he had, you know, a pretty good showing at the combine, a pretty crazy good showing at the combine, actually. And he forced me to go back and look, and I just still didn't come away impressed.
Lorenzo Carter is a flashiest guy. I think he's a 3-4 outside linebacker, speed rusher, flashes guy. That's kind of, you know, I think third and 13, third and 12, whatever. If you got the opponent backed up and you're a 3-4 team, you can put Lorenzo Carter on the field and just tell him to go. And there are a couple of flashes of plays I remember watching from him at Georgia.
That Notre Dame
where he
game.
He just like jumps off the snap, bends the edge, makes disruption. Either he gets a sack or somebody else. But I mean, they're just flash plays. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where I am with Carter. I think that his flash plays are really high.
Yes.
Some of his flash plays are almost my favorite. Some of my favorite plays from the pass rush class. But they're not. He's not a guy that. He's not really a guy that. Especially you play in a 4-3. Mm-hmm. I think that he's a guy that you play in a 3-4.
I kind of graded him the same way. I didn't see that he could be that. And like you said, his flash plays, that Notre Dame game was out of control. He just all over the place in every play, it seemed like. But then you don't see anything. I didn't see anything that resembled that game on the rest of his season. I did see some, you know, flashes here and there in games. But he just, I also thought that he was probably a 3-4 guy. If nothing else, I mean, he's an edge setter for right now, and then you see what he can bring you in the pass rush as well. But he's a big physical dude, a big strong guy. I mean, don't get me wrong.
He's stronger than his size, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. And that's going to come in handy for somewhere. If somebody can develop him, I think he has a chance to be good. But as far as, you know, where he sits on the scale of the rest of these guys, I, you know, wasn't overly impressed with him. What is your favorite group in this draft? Excluding quarterbacks.
Probably running back. Just because it's so easy to pop on any of these guys' tapes and go, oh man, I like that. You know, like whether it's somebody like Ito Smith or Chase Edmonds or John Kelly, like these just, you know, I'm naming just late round guys where you can watch. Hell, even Ralph Webb, who I don't think is going to get drafted. You know, you can pop on a lot of these guys' tape and enjoy it. And I think that's, you know, this era of running backs where you can almost get, you know, throw in anybody's tape and just enjoy what you're watching is really fun for me. And then obviously the guys at the top, I mean, Geis is phenomenal to watch. So is Michelle. So is Chubb. Obviously Saquon Barkley, you know, Ronald Jones has been such a treat, you know, all these guys, I think they've been a blast to watch. And we didn't even get, you know, Damian Harris would have been my favorite running backs to come out this year from Alabama. And he ended up going back. So, I mean, this class wasn't even what it could have been, I don't think. And so you're just going to continue to see the running back class be one of the stronger classes in the NFL draft, I think.
Yeah, I think that this running back class is going to be pretty important for the Colts. I'm excited to see if maybe a guy like Rashad Penny falls to them somewhere, you know, in the maybe the second round. Am I all right with that? Late second, early.
Oh yeah,
third?
No, I don't. Rashad's not gonna. He's not getting drafted first round. He'll be a day two pick.
Okay, it's kind of where I assumed that he would be, and I think most people kind of have him in that range. But he's an exciting dude. He was one of the most productive backs in the country last year, and there are a lot of guys that you just don't see with that kind of a skill set, I guess, year to year. And this year we've got several guys that are ranked above him. And I mean, last year there was a lot of talk about this running back class being really impressive. And then this year, this running back class seems to be equally, if not more impressive, than last year even. And, I'm looking for a back who is, you know, we want a physical guy. Somebody I was a little more impressed with, than I thought I would be Scarborough.
Sure.
With his combine. Yeah. I didn't expect to have much impression with him as far as especially in his 40. You know, I just thought I did not expect his 40 to be, what was it, 4'6", 4'6", something like that?
No, anybody, truly, I don't keep up with high school recruiting that much, but I do a little bit because I graduated from the University of Florida, and so I kind of like pop my head in every time, you know, it's near National Signing Day or something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, don't be surprised if every running back from Alabama is not a freak, just because the kids that they're getting to commit to that school are ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Damian Harris is going to be phenomenal next year. Josh Jacobs is also fantastic. And then the true freshman they had this year, Najee Harris is basically Derrick Henry size, but probably even better than Derrick Henry.
Wow.
Like, and it's just gonna keep coming for as long as Saban is there. So, I mean, Mark Ingram, I mean, Trent Richardson's one of the last, you know, like true bust prospects from the running back position I think we're gonna see from Alabama.
Right.
Cause I mean, everybody else has been, even Kenyon Drake. I mean, like, Kenyon Drake was awesome, you know? Yeah, TJ Yeldon's probably one of the worst running backs, and I think that's really saying something.
Yeah. And he's worlds better than Trent Richardson ever turned out to be. But
you're a Colts guy.
We in Colts Nation don't know nothing about that.
Yeah. Hold on. Can I say a running back take?
Yeah, for sure.
Don't be surprised if Nick Chubb's the second running back taken.
Really?
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that I'm surprised about that for the most part, just because of how he was talked about so much. I guess if you go back 6 months, that's like everybody's take, right? But lately, it hasn't been anything close to that, right?
Yeah, I think the medicals were pretty big for him at the combine, and I'm pretty sure the medicals checked out for every doctor. So, instead, they just see a guy who has freakish athletic ability at his size. Hmm. That's all I'm saying. Don't be surprised if he's the second running back taken.
I don't think that we should be. I don't think we should be surprised. I mean, a lot of people were with Ronald Jones as the second guy off the board as of late, and I think that's kind of been the maybe not, I guess. But it seems that was the other guy that people were saying that they thought could possibly come off the board after Barkley. This the Colts need, like, kind of not necessarily a guy that big as Scarborough, but the Colts need a guy like Chubb who can do both. He can punch and the dude can, you know, get out and be elusive. And I really want the Colts to possibly, if they can do something with their picks in order to get a nice dose, maybe a couple extra three and or an extra three or a four round pick to get, I'd like for them to double dip on running back depending on what they do in free agency. I just think that they can get themselves two different kinds of backs. They don't have much on the roster other than Marlon Mack, and Marlon Mack still has some developing to do. I think that if you pair Mack with another guy who can be equally effective, you know, running between the tackles and can play in the, not only in the passing game, but can protect. And that's one of the things that Chubb is fairly good at.
Yep. I'm with you.
I think that that's going to be an that could be an exciting pairing, but the Colts aren't going to be if you think that he's coming off the board second as running back. I don't think that the Colts are going to be in line for that, but that would be fun to think about, at least from my end of it. Trevor, excellent knowledge from you as always, my man. Thank you for joining us here on the Colts Cast. Is there anything that what are you guys doing in the next couple of days that you want to plug, my man?
No, we're just doing, we're trying to stay as wide as we can with our coverage of free agency. So, pewterreport.com, if you guys ever want to pop in, and I've got kind of like a signing and even a rumors tracker of where people might be looking, what teams, and not just the Bucs either. It'll be what the Colts are looking at for sure. Some of these free agents that are going to be coming across the wire all week. So,
excellent. You guys can catch Trevor on Twitter at Tampa Bay Trey. Trevor, always great having you on, man. Thank you.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
Excellent to talk to Trevor again. Always super knowledgeable about what's going on with the NFL draft. Just a great resource for all of you guys and all of us, and me included, to be able to hear some of the things that he's got going on. Great stuff with Trevor and his co-host, John Ledyard, on the Locked On NFL Draft. Make sure you guys are checking him out there and on Twitter as well. But thank you guys all for joining me. Make sure you guys are giving the podcast some ratings and reviews on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, whatever it's called. Always appreciate you guys stopping by. Let's do it again. We're going to have a live show here in the next day or two. We're going to let some more of the free agency kind of materialize, and then we'll get back at it. So until then, I'll talk to you guys later right here on the Colts Cast. Stampede Blue.